Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the Internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For Tech Stuff listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. One audiobook to consider is The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology by Ray Kurzweil. Kurzweil explores a future where man and machine are one and the same. Tech Stuff is fascinated by the idea of singularity, and this is a great book to learn more about it. The Singularity is Near, When Humans Transcend Biology by Ray Kurzweil. Available from Audible. To try Audible free today and get a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/techstuff. That's audiblepodcast.com/techstuff.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. My name is Chris Paulette, and I'm an editor at HowStuffWorks.com. Sitting across from me, as usual, using a pretty typical-looking corporate laptop, is senior writer Jonathan Strickland.
It was a wrong number that started it. The telephone ringing three times in the dead of night, and the voice on the other end asking for someone he was not.
All right, then.
Yeah, so today we're going to talk... Thank you. Yes. Well, I don't know why I'm thanking you. It's a quote that I did not write, so Just quoted. We are today talking about ultrabooks, and what the heck are they, and do you want one?
I figured it was a computer that wore a silver suit with a flashing light on its chest that took on big rubbery monsters.
No. Sadly, not. I'm still waiting for the Gigantor computer that can only be controlled by a little child. But the ultrabook is a new class of notebook style computers.
Why? Marketing.
Yeah.
But
no, it really is.
It
just
really
like
is.
Just like how netbooks were marketing.
A thing.
That was a thing, right?
Yes.
And in a way you could say that the ultrabook is sort of a reaction to two things. One is the netbook movement, which kind of got took a hit when tablets started to get popular, because people were saying, well, I could get a tablet device, which is a really cool form factor and has a fun touchscreen interface, or for around the same price, I could get a netbook, which is essentially an underpowered computer.
Right.
And there were a lot of people who said, well, if between those two choices, I will go with the tablet. So the netbook sales, netbooks were a big thing just a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. Netbook sales started to take a little bit of a dip. And so computer manufacturers started to look around and say, well, what can we do about this? Do we keep pushing netbooks or do we get into a different market? The other thing that really, really, I think, launched the Ultrabook movement was Apple. Mm-hmm. With the MacBook Air.
Yes.
Now, the MacBook Air is a super slim MacBook.
Yes.
Right? And it gets that slim form factor through lots of different ways. One thing is, you remove the optical drive.
Yes. So there's no DVD drive in it at all.
Yeah. Yeah. So once you remove the optical drive, you've now conserved a lot of space and mm-hmm. you use a solid state hard drive, so you don't have to have platters in there or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So the MacBook Air is this really thin, beautiful computer. Mm-hmm. Like it's aesthetically, it's very pleasing.
Right.
And it's also a fairly powerful computer, for its form factor. Also it's a premium computer. Mm-hmm. It's, you're paying a premium price, partly because it's Apple and partly because of the design of the computer itself.
So, the MacBook Air, sort of got a lot of attention just because of the way it looks and because it has that solid state drive, which, they're naturally more expensive than the platter hard drives. Now, if you look at the specs, simply looking at a Apple computers, if you put a MacBook versus a MacBook Air, you'll notice that the processor is generally a little slower.
Yep.
And the drive is smaller because it's a solid-state hard drive. Mm-hmm. And it's, sort of more expensive for what you're getting. It may be less expensive than the MacBook, but then you go, for a couple hundred dollars. So you have to decide what you want. But for some people, for a set of people who wanted an Apple laptop, they said, you know what? I really like the fact that it's lighter, it's smaller, and look how sleek it is. I remember Steve Jobs unveiling the thing, and he pulled it out of a manila envelope.
Yeah, which got a pretty big reaction. I mean, before that, you just didn't see computers that were thin enough to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, other manufacturers started making thinner laptops. I remember Sony came out with a couple of the Vaio laptops that were really slender.
Samsung came out with its Series 9 in particular, mm-hmm, was mm-hmm. a very thin one. And that's one of the lines that we'll probably talk about in this podcast. But the idea of the Ultrabook really, really comes from Intel.
And it's funny because Intel has actually set forth some standards. They in 2011... they announced standards for what would become the Ultrabook, and they actually named it the Ultrabook, and they said, if you're going to make an Ultrabook, whatever that is,
right,
this is what it means.
You have to meet these bare minimum standards. Like, for example, it can be no thicker than 21 millimeters, which is 0.83 inches thick. If it's thicker than that, then technically it should not be called an Ultrabook.
Neener, neener.
It also should have a very fast startup. And should in fact go from sleep mode to full interaction within 7 seconds. 7 seconds is the maximum amount of time it should take to go from sleep mode to ready to go, which is pretty fast.
Yeah.
Especially if you've ever had like an older notebook computer and had it go into sleep mode and then try to wake it up. Sometimes you start the wake up process and then you think, all right, gonna go make some coffee.
Maybe
make a couple phone calls before I get back.
Part of that, I think, is the information being fragmented on the hard drive and all the stuff that you install on the computer and you have it running. And, it's not like it's brand new. I think that's what they're saying the 7 seconds is, when you get it from the manufacturer.
Yeah. Other things that
mileage
it,
may vary.
It needs to do, it needs to have at least between 5 and 8 hours of battery life. It needs to have features in it that protect consumers against theft. So a lot of these devices have software and hardware in it that can help consumers track down where the computer is should it ever be stolen. It's very useful.
Yes.
And then ultimately, well, it's Intel, so an Ultrabook has to have an Intel Core processor. If it doesn't have an Intel Core processor, technically it is not an Ultrabook, at least according to Intel. Now, Ultrabook, I think, will end up becoming shorthand for very sleek, fast computers. I don't know that they will necessarily remain the domain of Intel. I mean, even if Intel trademarks it, I imagine that that term is going to be used pretty loosely. Mm-hmm. I've heard people talk about the MacBook Air as an Ultrabook, although by definition, it's not.
Right.
Yeah, so they also usually have a solid-state drive because that does conserve space, physical space, not digital space, but physical space. And they often won't have things like optical drives. You'll have to use digital downloads to get access to software.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the price point, under $1,000.
Well,
supposed to be.
Yeah, a lot of the Ultrabooks that I saw – I recently went to, if you've listened to our episode about my Consumer Electronics Show visit, CES visit of 2012, you probably heard about me talk about some of these Ultrabooks. We'll find out because we haven't actually recorded it yet, but it's going to publish before this one.
I made a note.
It's like a time travel thing. Anyway, there's several computers that were falling under the Ultrabook name that topped $1,000.
Yeah. This is looser than the other definitions.
Right. Like the Samsung Series 9 computer that I mentioned.
That's technically an Ultrabook.
If you want to go with the price, then it's not. It's because it's $1,399. But it's 0.64 inches thick, which means it's 1.6 centimeters. It meets the minimum requirement for thickness. It's absolutely gorgeous design, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was very pretty. I liked it a lot. But, that's one that was often being lumped in with the other Ultrabooks. Other ones included the HP Envy 14 Spectre.
Yes.
Which
that
was on the thick side for Ultrabooks. It was still a very thin computer, but it was thicker than most of the other Ultrabooks that were on display. The interesting thing to me about the HP Envy was that it has Gorilla Glass on the computer itself. So the back of the computer is coated in Gorilla Glass, and the base of the keyboard, where the touchpad is, that whole section is coated in Gorilla Glass, which helps it protect it from scratches, things like that. Also has near-field communication technology built into it.
Oh, okay. So, you know, if you want to go and, buy a drink from a soda machine, you can hold up your laptop and pay for it with that.
Tom Merritt of Tech News Today made the same point, and I think that misses the applications you can use NFC for. Okay, let's take the opportunity to clear that up, because I can understand that being the first reaction, saying, why would you put NFC in a laptop? If NFC is what you're using to use your cell phone to purchase stuff at a vendor, why would you put it in a laptop? Okay, NFC is a communications protocol.
Right.
Like, so it's
Bluetooth?
So you don't – it's not necessarily payment. Let's say that you pull up some information on your laptop computer and you want to transfer it to your phone. NFC might enable that to happen. So, for example, let's say that you're typing in a map thing on your computer and then you think, oh, I should put that in my phone so that way I can navigate to wherever it is I'm going. NFC could allow you to transfer that very seamlessly, right? You wouldn't have to go into your phone and also pull it up. It would just come up on your phone. Or let's even say that you are shopping, but you're shopping online.
Mm-hmm.
And you already have all your credit card information programmed into your smartphone with whatever service you're using, like Google Wallet, let's say. And then you have an NFC chip in your laptop, and you just wave your smartphone to your laptop. The transaction goes through. You don't have to type in your credit card number or anything like that, and it's all taken care of for you. Those are applications for NFC technology. It's not just waving your laptop at a cashier, although I guess you could do that. These are thin enough. By the way, weight is not a requirement for these things.
Oh, so they can weigh nothing.
Or they can weigh everything.
Oh, okay.
I just blew your mind. But no, I actually talked with an Intel Intel representative and mentioned, I said, oh, so is there a weight limit to these two? Like, does it have to be under 5 pounds, for example? And she said, no. So you can make one out of uranium and it'd be nice and heavy. Also radioactive. Don't recommend it. But at any rate, weight is not not a factor when it comes to what determines an ultrabook.
Now available, the HP Isotope.
Yes. And at CES, Intel mentioned that there was, I think, 65 ultrabooks in development with possibly, yeah, 65 different ultrabooks from various manufacturers, you know, including Intel had one that was a little weird, the Nakishi. Did you read about the Nakishi?
Gesundheit.
No, that doesn't answer my question.
Oh, no, no.
Okay, so this was a particularly interesting design, and I use interesting in the most vague way possible. I don't know. I go back and forth on this. It's kind of a neat idea, but kind of weird too. So if you look at your typical notebook computer, at the base of the keyboard, the bottom section of the keyboard, it's where your trackpad is, right? And, you know, place where you usually rest your wrists or whatever while you're typing on the keyboard. Well, in the Nakishi, there's a section just below that that's completely clear. So, you know, it's like a clear window at the base of the keyboard. So, it's like you could see the desk beneath your computer. Well, why would you do that? That's because when you fold the computer down, there, within that clear window, there is an interface you can use even when the computer itself is in sleep mode. There's a, and it's like a Windows 8 style, it's the Metro operating system.
Right.
So you've got this little touch-based operating system that you can use to do things like check an email message or other small apps while the computer itself is still closed. So it sort of puts in a little bit of tablet functionality into a notebook form factor without it actually being a hybrid.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it was a completely, it was a concept model. It's just a prototype. It's not something that's necessarily ever going to go to the market. In fact, I would be shocked to see it go to the market. It was interesting, but odd. Like, I personally, I was thinking, well, that's kind of a weird take, but then really what it shows is the potential for an ultrabook.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
And another one that did the potential for an ultra book was the Lenovo Yoga. Did you see this?
That actually, I was about to ask you about that. Did you actually get your hands on one of these?
I didn't get my hands on one, but I did see it in person.
Yeah, now this is an ultra book that I guess it's called the Yoga because the it can flip in a way that actually turns it into a tablet.
It's bendy bendy.
Bendy bendy.
Yeah, you know how
that's a marketing term.
You can bend the screen back, and once the screen hits about 180 degrees, the keyboard shuts off. So you don't have to worry about accidentally typing something on the keyboard while you're converting it into its other form factor.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you fold the screen back, and you can fold it so that it is a stand. So in other words, it makes a triangle with whatever surface you've put it on,
mm-hmm.
and it becomes like a touchscreen interface.
Like isosceles.
Or you can fold it all the way back and it becomes a tablet, and mm-hmm. then you can use it, as a tablet.
So the screen would be on the outside of one side and then
keyboard's on the other side. Yeah. But again, the keyboard shuts down after you hit 180 degrees. So even though you've got a keyboard on the back of this tablet, it's not like you're going to be accidentally typing in gibberish while you're trying to navigate Angry Birds.
However, I would suggest not putting it down on the cafe table and then spilling your coffee on the table because then it would get in the keyboard.
I'd never recommend spilling your coffee on the cafe table, whether you've got technology on it or not.
Well, that's true because then you can't drink it.
Yeah. I mean, well, I have been known to – never mind. That's
wow.
There's certain coffee shops in Atlanta I am no longer allowed into. Let's just say that.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Sometimes you gotta have that cup of coffee. So yeah, there are literally dozens of different ultrabooks that are in development. I mean, I said, 65 in 2012 alone. I think 65 to 70. And
they show that different manufacturers have a different take on the concept.
Right. I mean, there's some I saw that are going to be priced as low as around $800, $850, which is, that's pretty competitive for something that's on the cutting edge of form factors, if not the actual guts of the device itself. Again, it's going to have an Intel Core processor for it to be called an ultrabook. So there's a certain level of speed that you're going to expect from any ultrabook. But some of them, of course, are going to have like the most advanced chipset that you can possibly get in that form factor.
Mm-hmm.
Like Samsung Series 9, that's a good example because there are three different series that kind of fit in the ultrabook category from Samsung.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Series 5, Series 7, Series 9. The higher you get, the more luxurious the device.
Right, right.
So the 9 is a sleeker design, has more powerful components, and a higher price point than the 5s.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand there's a new chipset coming from Intel, codenamed Haswell.
Yes. So we had Sandy Bridge, mm-hmm. right? So Sandy Bridge was the big development last year, and then we have Ivy Bridge that's just coming out now.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be in 2012, at least in the first half, probably the first three quarters,
mm-hmm.
we're going to have lots of devices running on Ivy Bridge processors. But the one after that is, as you said, so we're going to that'll be the next big development. And again, this is showing improvements in speed and size.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they call it a system on a chip, too, which would work better in this kind of form factor, I would imagine, because you've got all the components there where you don't have to include separate other pieces to the operating puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And I would assume that would take up a lot less space. Now, I don't know if you would sacrifice performance as a result of that.
Right.
But it's still, still on the ways, coming. But that's the way the tablets handle it, too, like the iPad and the Android tablets.
Mm-hmm.
So, but all of these Intel machines now, do they necessarily have to use Windows? Because I didn't see anything that said specifically, now all of these machines we've been talking about use Windows, specifically Windows 8, too, because that allows them to use that tablet functionality. But I'm wondering if there's a possibility that you could run something like Android on an ultrabook.
There's nothing in Intel's lineup of requirements that says that it has to use a particular operating system mm-hmm. versus another.
Interesting.
But I think the trend is to go to Windows mainly. I think mostly it's an image thing. The idea being that these devices are devices designed to compete with the MacBook Air.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a perception within the general consumer market that Windows and Apple are the two operating systems.
Yeah.
You know, and we all know there are other operating systems besides Windows and Mac OS.
Yes.
But to the general consumer, that's what an operating system is.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that if you're trying to create a luxury product and you want to make as many sales as possible, you're going to go with an operating system that most people are familiar with. Maybe some of these will have options where you can choose to get a model that runs, say, a Linux-based operating system as opposed to Microsoft. But
mm-hmm.
but that'll be the exception to the rule. They tried that with netbooks.
Yeah.
Right? That was one of the things about netbooks, was that you actually had the option with some of the providers, some of the manufacturers, to get a model that ran Linux operating system as opposed to Windows. And it got kind of a negative reaction amongst the general consumer market. I mean, at first you had a lot of people adopting it because they were cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't have to pay the licensing fee to Microsoft for the operating system, and that reduced the cost of the device overall. So then you're like, well, there's two different versions of this one netbook I like. One of them is $150 cheaper than the other, so clearly I'm going to go with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get it home and you realize, I don't know what this operating system is. I'm not familiar with it. I don't even know if all of my software is going to run on it. I'm going to have to learn this new thing. I'm irritated. I'm returning this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had a lot of stories about the return rate on netbooks, because people were unhappy with either the performance of the machine or, more specifically, the operating system.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would probably mean that we're going to see fewer instances of that with Ultrabooks. Not necessarily a complete absence, but I think that the majority of them are going to be Windows-based machines.
Yeah.
Especially with the push for Windows 8 in 2012. The combination of the new machines coming out and the new operating system coming out, I think, is going to be, you know, that's going to be the focus for 2012.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now, that being said, would I buy an Ultrabook? I'll tell you this. I tried to win one. I was at the Intel booth, tried to win one on two different occasions. To be fair, at the time, my work computer had gone kaput.
Yes.
And so I was thinking, this will be a way where I can write stuff because I can get another computer.
Mm-hmm.
That did not work out for me. It turns out my dance moves, they aren't as fly as I had anticipated. What?
You just used fly.
Yes, well, I'm not as fly as I had hoped.
All right, then.
So, yeah, turns out if you do have the opportunity to win an Ultrabook from Intel, doing the robot, not necessarily going to win you anything.
Right, right. Okay.
Yeah, I should have popped and locked.
Well,
working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI. And Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
It'll be interesting, I think, to see how far this goes. The concept behind it, I think, is sound. I think people want a lighter, thinner machine.
Yeah.
Just because it's lighter and thinner. But the idea behind Ultrabook as a name, I don't know if that will have the lasting power. But
I think they also want, if they want something that's going to be in a computer form factor, they want something that's going to be more powerful than a tablet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at a netbook versus a tablet and you think that their performance is about the same, again, I think most people sort of lean toward the tablet mode just because it's kind of a cooler form factor.
Mm-hmm.
If you go with the Ultrabook, then one of the marketing things you can say is that, hey, this device is far faster and has far more memory and et cetera, than the tablets do. Therefore, if you're in the market for a computer, this is the way you should go.
Yeah.
It's ultra portable and ultra powerful, I guess, is what you could say.
And ultra booky.
And ultra booky. Ultra bookish.
So, this, I also think, is an indication that people are more comfortable using the cloud for storage and for other applications because, without an optical drive, as most of these machines are, it gives you fewer options for installing new software.
Yeah.
But I think people are becoming more comfortable purchasing and downloading software from the internet now.
And we're seeing more app stores. Intel has its own app store.
Mm-hmm.
So just as Apple has the Mac app store
mm-hmm.
for Mac computers, Intel's got its own app store up now, which allows you to shop for various kinds of apps and software
mm-hmm.
directly from Intel and buy them that way, and then download it, and then you've got it on your machine. Yeah, the real interesting thing to me is that the evolution of the personal computer as seen it at shows like CES
mm-hmm.
suggests that if you don't have a broadband connection, you're getting left out.
Mm-hmm.
Back in, 5 years ago, you didn't have to have a broadband connection to have a good computer and a good suite of software.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you could go out and buy a hard copy of whatever piece of software you wanted. You get it on disk, you load it into your computer, and you're good to go. But now that we're getting to a point where the optical drive is starting to disappear, if you don't have that broadband connection, then you're cut off from the content. You're cut off from the software.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, and it's kind of silly to say this, but in a way, CES really paints a picture of widening the digital divide.
Yeah.
Because you're talking about a class of customers who have to have a bare minimum access of technology in order to take advantage of the products you're launching.
Yeah.
And if
you
don't have that, then you're stuck. Now, 5 years ago, that was electricity.
Yeah.
Now it's broadband. And I think it's pretty safe to say that electricity penetration is greater than broadband penetration.
Yeah.
And of course, there's still companies out there that are marketing devices that are meant for consumers who don't have broadband access.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a specialty product now. That's not like the general product that hits the store shelves. So that's kind of an interesting trend as well. We'll have to see how this plays out. I imagine that Ultrabooks will do fairly well because it's competing in a different space than netbooks were.
Mm-hmm.
Some people would argue that Ultrabooks really should just be called notebooks.
Yeah.
They're just particularly sleek notebooks. And also, I guess we should mention, we talked about the thickness and everything. Typically, these Ultrabooks have a screen size between 13 and 14 inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's your typical Ultrabook. There are, outliers, but that's, they're larger than your netbooks are. And that was another point, was that people were saying, Ultrabooks are going to be preferable to netbooks because you won't have the same cramped keyboards that you had in the netbook form factor. And there were several netbooks that came out that definitely had small keyboards that were a little uncomfortable to type on if you had, you know, man hands.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, if you were larger than a child.
Well, I just get the sense that people are – that the average person is not going to see Ultrabooks as a thing. I think this is more as a – you know, from the manufacturers. But I don't think the general public is going to think of Ultrabooks necessarily as a separate thing. That said, I think it will have another effect too, is, you know, pushing the plain old laptop – and toward the lower end of the scale in terms of price.
Yeah.
Now that they could charge more for an Ultrabook because it's sleek and efficient and cool looking. You can have this brick top for $400, or you can buy an Ultrabook for $999.
Well, yeah, I think Ultrabooks will – it'll all depend on the marketing.
And
if these companies all come out and start using Ultrabook as a marketing term, then maybe the general consumer will have, like, they'll think of Ultrabooks as being its own specific category.
Right.
Frankly, I haven't seen any of the advertising materials, but, you know, just based upon the press releases I saw at CES, the term was prevalent.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was one of the big themes of CES this year.
Yeah. But I think this move is really showing that the manufacturers have moved on from the concept of netbooks.
Definitely.
And that between tablets and ultrabooks, there's really not much of a market segment for the netbook anymore.
Right. Well, yeah, and I think that pretty much sums it up. I mean, that's what we have so far. Whether or not this will become a successful category in consumer electronics remains to be seen. If it fails, it's certainly not because it lacked support on the manufacturer side.
No, no.
Yeah, because there's a lot of enthusiasm, let me tell you. If you haven't seen these devices, you really need to get a chance to take a look at them, either online or if you can go to a store just to get a look at the form factors. Because even if you're not in the market for a new computer, it's kind of interesting to see the move to this design where everything is whopper thin.
Okay.
All right. That wraps up our discussion on Ultrabooks. If you guys have any topics you would like us to cover, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, or write to us at our brand new email address, TechStuff@discovery.com. And Chris and I will talk to you again really soon.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.